You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Well, did you listen to President Obama? But our president gave the State of the Union address last night, and I'm going to really not go over the entire speech and dissect it, but I am going to hit two areas, and they pertain to jobs, because if you ask the American people what their number one concern is, invariably you'll get two answers, jobs and the economy, which is another way to say jobs, because the American people are hurting. Not all the American people. Many people have good-paying jobs. And I want anybody that's ready, willing, and able to work to find a good, permanent, full-time job. I think that is the goal. The problem is not the goal. I think Democrats, Republicans, progressives, liberals, conservatives, libertarians, socialists, Marxists, even communists could agree that the goal should be near full employment. And even one step further, a peace and what I call a peace and prosperity economy. You see, ladies and gentlemen, today, because of massive government intervention into the economy domestically, as well as the world and other nations globally, the United States has become the largest in the entire history of the world, the largest warfare and welfare state. And that means more and more government spending, more and more taxes, more and more debt, more deficit spending, where we spend every year billions, hundreds of billions, and many years trillions of dollars more than we collect in taxes. The United States is bankrupt, but the results of failed economic policies, of government interventionism, both under Republican presidents such as George W. Bush, as well as Democratic presidents such as Barack Obama, has led to an economy that's growing at less than its historical rate of 3.1%. And frankly, we could do better than that. I think if we had significantly less regulation, taxes, and government spending, we should be growing at somewhere between 4 and 5% and even higher. We're not anywhere near that. We're growing about two-thirds speed, somewhere between 2 and 2.5%. And we'll be getting more information on that later this week. Yes, we've been in a recovery since July of 2009. So 10, 11, 12, 13, for over 4 years, 4.5 years, the economy has been growing. That's the good news. And it is good news. But it's not been growing at 3% or 4% or 5, 6, 7%. And those are the growth rates you need to get the unemployment numbers down and to get job opportunities for young people, both teenagers and people in their early 20s that are looking for their first-time job, that are so-called new entrants into the labor force. The problem is we have in the White House, as well as many in the Congress, Democrats and, sad to say, Republicans as well, believers in the answer to any problem is a government program, a new regulation, a new tax, a new law. They believe government is the answer. I agree with Ronald Reagan. Government is the problem, manifestly is the problem on many, many fronts. So I'm going to zero in on jobs and a related issue that relates directly to jobs for American citizens of all ages, illegal immigration. Now, I've had two shows this week on both legal immigration and illegal immigration, or what I call illegal aliens. I'm not going to repeat those other than I am going to link it to the employment situation, because the problem is today, and it's an acute problem, young people, teenagers, as well as people that are going to college or graduating from college are finding it increasingly difficult to find a full-time job. So I was interested, although I really anticipated, I sort of knew what the president was going to propose, and he did not disappoint me in any regard, at any regard. I listened to excerpts of the speech. I actually read the speech at home late last night, and it was a very frustrating speech to read because it was very, very, very misleading. You really had to be up on your facts to know that you were being misled in many, many ways. But I'm not going to dissect the entire speech and point out the errors. I'm going to really zero in on his proposed increase of the minimum wage for federal contracts to $10.10 an hour, $10.10 an hour. And I wish to point out, I don't know if it's going to be published, but I just finished a good first draft. I need to do a little editing, but it's 95% there. An article on the State of the Union message and reaction to it by Senator Cruz from Texas, our senator, junior senator from Texas, as well as the junior senator from Kentucky, Senator Rand Paul. And Rand Paul actually is given, this is I think his third response to the president's State of the Union message. And it's on YouTube. It's about a little under 10 minutes. And I urge you to view it. Now, I have not posted, I've actually prepared my blog post. I need to make this announcement up front for new listeners. The way you listen to the Pronk Pop show is to go to my companion blog, which is Pronk Pops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And once you're there, at the very top, you'll have links to my recent shows. At the very top, you have about 60 links, and below that, you have a complete archive of all my shows. So that's how you listen to the show. But in addition to the show, I publish some of the material that I look at. I'm very selective. Sometimes I give a lot of information. Sometimes I don't give as much. But what I will post on that page, embedded in the page, will be relevant YouTube articles, YouTube videos that may be of interest to you if you want to pursue it, as well as additional articles and news stories on, for example, this post is on the State of the Union, and you have actually, if you missed it, you have two YouTube videos of the State of the Union message, as well as some reaction last night. I'll add to it today. And I provide that information because I tell all my listeners, do your homework. Do your homework. Now, I know many of you work or go to school and don't have time. That's fine. But you need to be informed. You need to be an informed citizen, not an ignorant citizen. Ignorant citizens lead to tyranny. We need an active citizen that's well informed about the current issues. And I'm hitting two of probably the top four or five issues facing the country today. What do we need to do to get back to a near full employment situation, which I defined as 3% or less using the U3, the government's, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, U3 unemployment rate, which they calculate every month based on a sample of approximately 60,000 households. They call it the household survey. That's where your unemployment number comes from. And a point I was trying to make yesterday, ever since President Obama has been president, the unemployment rate has been above 6%. As a matter of fact, most of that time, it's been over 8 and 9, and it actually hit 10%. That is, ladies and gentlemen, that's awful. Because you'll get somewhat of a debate amongst professional economists as to what is the near full employment rate. And there's a rather wide range of between 3 and 5%. As far as I'm concerned, 3% or less is near full employment because you're always going to have people between jobs, people that are new to the labor market looking for jobs. So 3% is a good target number. And if we had good economic policies, which we haven't, we've really had a disaster of economic policies in the last 12 years, we would be there. However, we have not. We've been typically between 4 and 6%. And some would say that's the new normal, between 4 and 6%. Definitely under 6%. But it bounces around from usually between a more narrow range of between 4 and 5%. But you need to have another number to link it with, and that's the participation rate. And usually, and that has been historically over the last 5-6 decades, has gone up, up, and up. And the reason for it, in the late 40s, early 50s, you didn't have as many women in a labor force, so the labor participation rate was about 58%, 59%. But what has happened over time? More and more women have entered the labor force. And as a result, you'll start seeing it in the late 60s, early 70s, continuing up until President Obama got in office. The normal range during the George Bush 8 years was between 66 and 67%. Occasionally it was above 67% or slightly below 66%, but that was the participation rate. And I truly believe if we had a near full employment number of 3% or less, we would be over 67% today. So you need to look at two numbers, because the reason why that's important, and you really have seen it in this so-called Great Depression, actually, excuse me, let me make a correction, the Great Recession, that started in December of 2007, and according to the National Bureau of Economic Research, their Committee on Timing of the Business Cycle, they said the recession started in December of 2007. In other words, the economy hit a peak in the November-December time frame, and it did, and then started to decline. Now, you need to understand that the shorthand definition of a recession, but it doesn't necessarily have to be true, is where you have negative real growth, or actually negative growth, in the real gross domestic product, or GDP. So we had a recession of approximately 19 months, not approximately, exactly 19 months, from December when we hit a boom to where we bottomed out, the economy bottomed out in June of 2009. And then the economy started to grow again, and that's or expanded. We had a period of contraction, which we call a recession, and then we had a period of growth, which we're still in, that started in July of 2009. That's a recovery. So we went from a recession to a recovery. Unfortunately, especially for young people, either high school dropouts or graduates or college dropouts or graduates, they have had a real hard time finding jobs. And if you're a minority, it's even worse. The unemployment rate, for example, for teenagers has been over 20% for the entire Obama administration. It's usually in the low teens, usually. It's always higher than the so-called U3 or headline number, the unemployment rate that you hear on your television shows, your news shows, your radio. It's always been higher, significantly higher, usually about double. But today it's over 20%. Now it's been going down a little bit. It's hit 25%. So what would you think President Obama would propose, given the situation that young people are having tremendous difficulty finding a full-time job? What would you think he would propose? Well, you'd be wrong, because he proposed two things in a State of the Union message. Now, there are many other things that he touched upon and also made proposals on. I'm just narrowing this show to two issues for the simple reason they're the number one issues if you ask the American people. Jobs and the economy. Jobs and the economy. And what President Obama proposed was an increase in the minimum wage to $10.10. Isn't that nice? $10.10. It's a little over $7.35. I don't have the exact number in my head, and I could be a little off. It's either $7.35 or $7.55. I don't know what the minimum wage is. But a key point you need to understand, most people do not earn the minimum wage. They earn significantly more than the minimum wage. That's an important number, important point to make and understand. You might get the impression everyone's making the minimum wage. Well, that's not true. You know it's not true. Who earns the minimum wage and how many? It's usually less than 3% of the workforce is actually earning the minimum wage. And the reason for that is the minimum wage is usually paid to young people. And usually it's for their first, second, or maybe even third job. It's when they have no experience, very little skills, and initially, for a lot of people, it's a part-time job, either after school or on the weekend or during the summer. For many people, it is for a part-time job to earn some money, either spending money or money for school, maybe books, food, whatever. And you're not going to get rich at the minimum wage. And as I was saying yesterday, you got to put yourself in the place of a business owner, especially a small business owner. He doesn't know very little about who he's hiring. He tries to find out as much as he can. He doesn't know whether they will show up on time. And if they show up on time, will they be presentable? They have clean clothes, clean shoes, their hair's cut, because he's running a business. And his employees, whoever he hires, are going to be interacting with his customers. So he's looking for people that, first of all, show up, that are dependable, and will do their job. Now, usually the job you're going to be doing at the minimum wage is manual labor or some form of that. And that could be, for example, janitorial. You can be a janitor, and I've had that job. You could be, let's say, a short order cook. I briefly had that job. Or an inventory stocking clerk at a retail store. I've had that job. And guess what? I was paid the minimum wage for all those jobs. Why? That's what I was worth to the employer. And believe me, it wasn't $10.10. And I'll date myself, it was less than $2 an hour. And I was real glad I had the job because it wasn't easy finding a summer job, period. Now, if you're lucky to find a good construction job, you could earn more money. But those were difficult to find, and it was harder work. You also might be a waiter or a busboy at a restaurant where, in addition to your wage, you would have tips. You might have tips. None of these jobs are good-paying jobs. Now, if you have some where customer service is key, again, you could earn more money in tips. And it could be a good-paying job if you were a very, very good waiter. Now, I'm saying this because I want to put everyone in the place of a business owner. Knock on his door, say, introducing yourself. He's going to ask questions, and some will have you fill out an application. Occasionally, they'll ask for a resume. He'll look it over. He'll ask you some questions. And usually the job you're applying for are like the ones I listed. Janitor, landscaping, mowing lawns, lifeguard, summer camp counselor. I was that too. They all were entry-level jobs requiring minimum set of skills. They weren't good-paying jobs. And I'd be the first to say I couldn't support myself or a family on that job. I was living with my parents, as are many teenagers and people in their 20s today. You could be, I was at it, for example. Now, I didn't do it as much as my brother, but you could bag groceries at a food store. We lived on military bases. It was a commissary. Most of those jobs, they didn't even pay the minimum wage. It was strictly tips. So you had to bust you know what to make some money. And most of that money was spending money to buy clothes, to buy whatever, games, comic books, whatever you spend your money on. You couldn't live on it. I'd be the first one to say you couldn't. You weren't expected to live on it. But those are typically the types of jobs and who fills those jobs. And it's a small percentage of the workforce. Now, what happens, and this has repeatedly happened, when the federal government intervenes into the economy and tells, mandates, coerces businesses to pay the minimum wage. What happens? Invariably happens. And you see it in the teenage unemployment numbers. You see it in the black teenage unemployment numbers as well, and it's worse. You don't have to be an economic genius or economics major to understand this. The unemployment rate spikes up and usually stays high for a number of years before it gradually starts to trend down. See, that is the economic consequence of raising the minimum wage from its existing level to $10.10. What is going to happen is going to make it a lot more difficult for young adults, teenagers, and people in their 20s, first of all, just to find a job. And I'm not talking a full-time job. I'm talking a part-time job. But either a full-time or part-time job will be made a lot more difficult to find. Why? Business owners can't pay you that. And they only will pay you that if you're doing a lot more work and have a lot more responsibility. So what's going to happen is, it's going to be a lot more difficult for young people to find jobs. And if you have one of these minimum wage jobs, you run a significant chance of being the one that's laid off. Some of you will be lucky and keep your part-time minimum wage or full-time. It could be either one. Today, many of the new jobs being created are no longer full-time. They're part-time. Whether it's the retail, hospitality, food, beverage, industry, construction. And construction's been hard hit, although it's gradually coming back. It is very difficult to find these minimum wage jobs. They're not, first of all, they're there, but businesses will pay you what they think you're worth. And in many instances, you're not even worth the minimum wage. And that's why today we have such a high unemployment
rate amongst teenagers. Over three times the headline or U3 number, the unemployment rate you hear in the news. I don't have the exact number in front of me. I think I'm very, very close. It's 20.2%, I think, is the number for teenage unemployment. The adult unemployment number is 6.7%. You do the math. It's right about three times. That's not good. It is not good because why? Young people need a career path. And the first ladder of success is getting on that ladder, getting at the bottom rung, and getting some work experience. Getting the discipline of having to show up on time in a presentable, wearing presentable clothes, and being courteous to not only the customers, but your fellow workers and your supervisors. To learn to get along and to learn the skills required to do that job in an effective and efficient manner. As far as I'm concerned, this is common sense. But we have many people on the left, especially the progressives and liberals, and many people, and they're mainly in the Democratic Party, but we have a lot of them in the Republican Party. They used to be called bleeding heart liberals. Oh, we need to make it higher because they can't live on that. It's not fair. It's not fair. You've heard that term? It's not fair. The president just loves it. It's not fair. Mr. President, anyone is only worth what someone else is willing to pay for them. I don't care if you think you're brilliant, you have terrific skills, you're a good public speaker, you're Mr. Personality. So what? What an employer is interested in is, can you do the job that I'm hiring for? And if you can't, they're not going to hire you or they're not going to keep you. And what happens is the federal government dictates, and that's what they're doing. They're dictating, a polite way to say it. They're mandating it. They're using government coercion to force, in this instance, federal contractors to pay $10.10. Now, I've been, for example, where you have a lot of federal contractors is the defense industry. I have worked in that industry, and I've worked for the largest, at least at the time, the largest defense contractor, General Dynamics. I didn't start at the minimum wage. I was way above the minimum wage. Why? I had skills that they wanted. I was a skillful contract negotiator. I was a skillful administrator of contracts. I dealt with the public. I dealt with subcontractors, contract, government officials. And I was not that old, okay? Now, I went from a janitor's job to that over a period of years. Now, what transpired in that period of years? First, I got my bachelor's degree, then what turned out to be my master's. I was going for my doctorate in economics, ABD, didn't complete my dissertation. I did complete my defense of it. Need to point that out. Then I went in the Air Force, had 5 years of experience in both contract administration and financial management on the F-15 program. And then when you put all that together, that's why General Dynamics was very, very interested in hiring me for the F-16 program. That's just to put in perspective. I have earned the minimum wage many times at jobs that, I'll be honest, I didn't particularly want, but I needed it. And I worked long hours and many hours of overtime as both a stocker, an inventory clerk, a janitor, a counselor, and I was glad to have the job at the minimum wage. But I was looking ahead. I was planning ahead. I was applying myself to get an education, a college education. And at one time, I wanted to pursue a career as a professor of economics, so I went to graduate school. But I had a prior military commitment, so I initially a 4 years that was extended to 5. And all along the way, I got promoted, I got raises, and I had good jobs. Now, I'm going over my story for a reason. Young people are having difficulty today to find that first, second, or third job. And many of those first, second, and third jobs are at the minimum wage. I never was going to make it a career to be a janitor or a clerk doing inventory or a stocker at a sort of like Walmart today. It wasn't called Walmart. And I had a commute to many of these jobs, sometimes taking one or more buses. But young people can't get in the door. And when you raise the minimum wage, like the president is proposing, invariably what happens is the teenage unemployment rate, as well as people in their 20s that are looking for their first, second, or third job, trying to get on that career ladder of success, that first rung, that unemployment rate's going to go up. This is bad economic policy. Now, if you ask me, what's your attitude to the minimum wage? It's very simple. Abolish it. Let the markets determine what individuals are worth. That means some of you that are earning the minimum wage would earn less. Not a lot less, but less. Some would earn more, and some would earn a lot more. I'm a strong believer in free enterprise and market determination of prices and wages. The government should have absolutely no role in this regard. They're interfering, they're intervening in the marketplace because they think they know better than the markets what the going rate should be. See, in many states, not all states, the going wage, kind of the think of it as the market going wage, is considerably above the minimum wage. They can't find people to even take the jobs at a much higher rate of compensation than the minimum wage. You find that, for example, in the boom areas where they're exploring and hitting oil. And that requires a lot of crews for drilling, but it requires people to man the restaurants, the hotels. There are jobs going begging up there or down there because the demand is significantly higher than the supply. And basic economics means that wage will be much higher than the mandated minimum wage. So in some respects, I tell young people, move. Go where the jobs are. Go where the economy is booming. Look for a job with small businesses. Because those are the people that create jobs. And because they have to compete in the labor market for people, they want to attract and retain good people. So if you demonstrate you're reliable, you show up in time, you dress correctly, you're good with both customers, you work with others well, you learn the assigned task, you do them, a couple of things are going to happen. One, you're going to get raises above the minimum wage, you're going to get promoted, and you'll move up that career ladder. And once you do, that's reflected on your resume, that's reflected on the positions you've held. That makes other employers want to compete for you and pay you much more than the minimum wage. And if you're going to start a family, get married, and have children, the first thing you need to do is move up on that career ladder and earn a lot more than the minimum wage. And that's what you need to do. Find a good paying job that you can support yourself, and if you get married, your spouse and your children. And I can see it's difficult, if not impossible, to do that on a minimum wage. And the few people that I know that try to do that are usually holding two or three jobs. It's not unusual for people not have one job in today's environment, but two or three. Why? They can't find a permanent full-time job. They want to. They want to work 40, 50, 60 hours and get overtime, even if it's at the minimum wage. But because, again, the government interfering in the marketplace with Obamacare and mandating that, fewer and fewer employers have the wherewithal to pay for health insurance. And they want to provide that for their full-time employees. I used to sell group health insurance as well as individual coverage, but primarily group health insurance. And almost all my clients were small businesses. Some were a little larger than small businesses, but most started out small and grew and grew and grew. One of the first employee benefits that they wanted for themselves, their family, and their employees was health insurance, bar none. At the first opportunity that they had the cash flow and could afford it, that is what they bought. Maybe not the best plan, but they needed something. And if I provided a good service to them and shopped it for them and provide them alternatives, they would do business with me and repeat business with me. And as they grew and their number of employees grew, so did I, because I earned money as commissions. I wasn't getting paid anything. I wasn't getting a minimum wage. I wasn't getting a salary. I was strictly on commission. So I was highly motivated to provide the best service possible to my clients. And I learned, although I also handled investments and retirement plans, I learned early that if you listed 12 things that a business wanted to do, number one on that list maybe number two. But for most companies, number one on that list was health insurance. They had other needs, such as if, let's say, a lot of businesses are one or two man, well, or two man operations. They were very much concerned if one of the persons died unexpectedly, that they wanted to be able to carry on the business, so they and pay off the widow. So you'd have key man insurance where if one of the owners died, it was funded by life insurance. That I'm getting too much into that, so I'll cut it off right here. But the number one need of small businesses in the employee benefit area by far was group health insurance. And they usually wanted the best plan they could afford. The operative word there is afford, because they have to pay not only their salaries, but their employee salaries. And they have to pay the rent, the heating, the air conditioning, the electricity for the lighting, insurance for property and casualty insurance. You can go on and on and on of the list of expenses. They were taking a risk. They thought they had a good idea for a business, and they were implementing their plan, and they needed good employees, and they understood they had to pay them what they're worth. And initially, what they're worth is the minimum wage. Not for everybody, but for that teenager that's still in high school, or that college student that needs a part-time job, or graduates from the same that can work longer hours, that's who they would hire. And if you did a good job, they would invite you back next year if it was a summer job, for example. But what's shocking, it's not shocking, I'm not surprised by this, but you would think by now that no president, Republican or Democrat, would, and especially in this economic environment, propose an increase in the minimum wage. And the president likes to make the point that the purchasing power, he didn't use those words, that the purchasing power of the minimum wage is much less. We'd have to go back to the Reagan administration to find 20%. I think he used the figure 20% less. Why is it 20% less? I'm going to do a minor digression. Where do we also find government intervention into the economy? It's the Federal Reserve System and the central bank, which is monetary policy. Their primary mission, besides being a lender of last resort, is stable prices. That's another word of saying your dollar purchasing power remains the same. Has the purchasing power of the dollar remained the same? We're going to be celebrating the 100th anniversary of the Federal Reserve this year. A dollar, a 1914 dollar, today is worth less than 3 cents. Why? We've had a steady decline, gradual but steady decline over the years, sometimes more, sometimes less, of what your dollar is worth. Ladies and gentlemen, that's government intervention, because our central bank is a creature of Congress, and they've been given the responsibility for monetary policy, and they have failed in their primary mission of keeping the currency stable, or keeping the purchasing power of the dollar the same over time. They haven't. And the reason why they haven't, that benefits the federal government, because it borrows, the federal government, because it's in debt to over $17.4 trillion in debt. That's more than the entire real GDP will be for this year. And it'll soon will be $18 trillion, definitely in the next 6 or 7 months. Because the U.S. government is running budgetary deficits where they spend more money than they collect in taxes, and they've been doing it now for over 12 years with significantly large deficits where outlays or expenses, spending, exceeds total tax collection. That's the definition of a deficit, and we've been running massive deficits. And before I forget, there's one thing that drives me nuts, and I need to point that early in his speech. It's one paragraph, but there's one sentence in that speech. The president says to the, I'm paraphrasing here, I have cut the deficit by half. That is true. That's not a lie. That's not a true, but it's very, very misleading. Why is it misleading? What did the president do? What did the Democratic Party do that control the House and Senate? Remember, there's an election every 2 years for our representatives in the House of Representatives. And a third of our senators are up for re-election every 2 years. So in the election held in November of 2006, the Democratic Party won control of both the House of Representatives and the Senate. That's why Nancy Pelosi was House Speaker, because the Democratic Party won. Remember, George W. Bush was president, a Republican. In January of 2007, 7 years ago, the Democrats controlled the House and the Senate, and they were responsible. Their first fiscal year budget that they were totally responsible was for the fiscal 2008 budget. That started 1 October of 2007. Remember, the Democrats control the House and Senate. It's their, they control the purse strings. All revenue bills, which are tax bills as well as spending bills, have to originate in the House and then be reconciled with the Senate bills. So the Democratic Party control both houses. What happened the very first year that they had it? They went on a spending binge. And as a result, the deficit for fiscal 2008, I don't have the revised numbers, but it was $459 billion. At the time, the press went nuts, blaming it on Bush. Look at that massive deficit. Oh, isn't that terrible? And it is. But who really is responsible for it? Now, the president signed the bill. That was his mistake. I would have vetoed it and demanded they override the veto if they could get the votes. He didn't do that. He just signed the bill. So he's partially responsible, too. But if you think that's bad, what do you think happened in fiscal year 2009? Remember, we had an election in 2008. Who got elected? You got it, Barack Obama. And who kept control? The House and the Senate? You're right, the Democratic Party. And what was the first thing they did in 2009? Pass the stimulus bill. So what do you think the deficit was the first year President Obama was in office? $1.4 trillion. That's over $1,400 billion. He more than doubled, not quite tripled, the deficit in his first year in office. You know, it's like someone that weighs 150 pounds, then for whatever reason puts on another 300. That's the equivalent of what Obama did. So the deficit ballooned in fiscal year 2009. We've never had a deficit prior to that above $1 trillion. Most of them were in the billions, 10, 20, 50, 100. The biggest one under Bush, where the House and the Senate were controlled by the Democrats, was nearly half a trillion, which is $500 billion. It was slightly under that. But the very, very first year President Obama was president, he ballooned the debt. Now what is he saying to mislead the uninformed, the ignorant? I call them the dots, the dummies on the street, the dots. Rush Limbaugh calls them the low-information voters. They don't follow this. They don't understand what they're reading. So, yes, Obama did cut the deficit in half to $680 billion from $1.4 trillion. In other words, over $1,400 billion to $680 billion for the fiscal year that ended in September, fiscal year 2013. He did do that. What's wrong with this picture? What is wrong with this picture? And why is this fundamentally misleading, if not a lie? What should Congress be doing? It should be cutting spending and balancing the budget where the deficit is zero, not $680 billion. And I'm looking very, the Department of Treasury puts out a report, the MTS report, every month. It's due out the eighth business day of the month. So sometime about Valentine's Day, I'll find out what the deficit is. They'll give you in detail by month the total spending as well as the total revenues coming in. I think we're headed back to another $1 trillion deficit. I could be wrong, because what's very, very difficult to estimate are the tax revenues. And for that matter, the spending can be hard as well. Cutting the deficit in half is not an accomplishment, Mr. President. especially when you're responsible and your party is responsible for doubling it, nearly tripling it in your very first year. So when you blow it up like that and get it out of control and then and think you're accomplishing something to get it down under 700 billion, I'm not impressed. It should be zero. Now, if you got it to zero and balanced the budget, I'd be clapping. I'm not clapping, I'm booing. Because what did the president do the following year? The deficit was over $1.3 trillion. And the next year, it was slightly under $1.3 trillion. And the next year, it was slightly under $1.1 trillion. This president has run massive deficits for 5 years. All 5 years has been president. That's why, one of the reasons why, unemployment is so high and the United States economy is stagnating is a direct result of out-of-control government spending. That's why we've had a very poor jobs creation environment. This is by far the worst recession post-war, or another way to say, excuse me, it's by far the worst recovery since World War II. And let me review that. I didn't have time. I was going to do some research, but I was running short because I was writing this other article. But and I've covered this before, but I want to set the record straight because there's some playing fast and loose with the facts here. Remember I said early in the show the economy peaked in November, December timeframe of 2007? The United States had the highest number of people working in the United States in November of 2007. And that number is 146.6 million. I'm rounding up, but that's the number. I'm rounding up, not down, up, just slightly, though. Keep that number in mind. Usually, the employment level will lag when the economy starts to recover. And I told you the recession ended in June of 2009, and the economy started to grow in July. And it's been growing since. That's the good news. Not growing at a high rate is the bad news. But the job situation bottomed out. In other words, we reached a low in terms of the employment level in December of 2009. So the labor market tends to lag the recovery in the economy in this instant by about 6 months. So from the very top, the highest employment level that the United States has ever had of 146.6 in November of 2007, we fell to 138 million in December of 2009. Now you can do the math. It's not very hard. We lost 8.6 million jobs. 8.6 million jobs. Now, as of the latest unemployment, the Bureau of Labor Statistics employment survey reports is the employment level as of December, what do you think it is? It's 144.6 million. You can look at it two ways. We're still 2 million jobs less than the previous high. Remember that number, 2 million jobs less than the previous high. Or, in terms of if you want to measure it from low, we have created 6.6 million jobs. The U.S. economy has, mainly the private sector. President Obama likes to take credit, and sometimes he increases that number above 6 million. But those are the government numbers. They're not my numbers. They're not a private organization numbers. Those are the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers that they publish monthly. I'm glad it went back up, but there's a jobs gap. And how big is that jobs gap? And this you need to understand. And this is why I get very mad when the president proposes this increase of the minimum wage. Every month, when George Bush was president, as well as when President Obama is president, you need, just to keep up with population growth, in other words, people entering the labor market for the first time, so-called new entrants, you need, and economists have a range, somewhere between 130,000 jobs per month to 150,000 jobs per month just to keep even. We're not talking reducing the unemployment rate. We're just keeping it steady at whatever rate it is. And that's month after month after month after month. Since November of 2007 through this month, We've had 73 months. That's 73 months. I'm not counting January, which make it 74. You do the math. 73 months times 130,000. That's a lot of jobs. Not quite 10 million, somewhere between 9 and 10 million. I don't have a calculator in front of me. That's the low number. If you use the 150,000, it's over 10 million jobs. And then when you add the 2 million that were short to get back to the previous peak, no matter which estimate used, the 130,000 the low end or the 150,000 per month at the high end, President Obama's is short over 10 million jobs. And as far as I'm concerned, it's over 12 million jobs short. Because I even think the 150,000 150,000 jobs per month is low, because it really depends on the participation rate, which I don't have time to get into, but it is critical. So what does our industrious leader propose? Raising the minimum wage for federal workers, contractors, from the current level to $10.10. Whoop-dee-doo. Whoop-dee-doo. Who does this hurt? It hurts young people. It hurts teenagers. It hurts people in their 20s. Think of it as people in high school graduates, or people, you know, 16 years older that could work part-time. It hurts college students that need a job to provide them money to either pay for books, clothes, or tuition. And these people don't have much job experience, don't have many job skills. These are the people that earn the minimum wage. And remember, it's only a small percentage of the total workforce that earns the minimum wage. I'm against having a minimum wage. I think an individual should negotiate with his employer, whoever that employer is, a business, a charity, a college, and given his skill set, get as much or as little as he can. The government should not be involved in interfering with the free negotiation of a wage. Because what does this lead to? The exact situation that we have now with teenage unemployment above 20%. And it's been much higher than that. And black teenage unemployment in the high 30s to 40%. And what does that mean? Are these people earning the minimum wage if they're unemployed? No, they're earning zero, absolutely nothing. Isn't that great? The economic consequences of Barack Obama proposing an increase of the minimum wage is you're going to have more young people unemployed. More, and he should know that, because most economists, not all, but most economists know this. Because most economists are not for the government determining either wage rates or prices or wage price control. And I know many young people voted for President Obama both, not once, but twice. And then they're wondering why they can't find a job. Well, you better start paying attention. I'm not saying you got to understand, well, it's good if you understand some basic economics, and you should, as far as I'm concerned, take at least one or two courses in it. But when you raise the minimum wage above the market going market rate for new entrants or inexperienced workers, invariably what happens is people that are working for the minimum wage, some of those are going to be fired. Yes, the ones that stay make more. And see, when you set the minimum wage significantly above the going rate, and what I mean by that, we're determined by supply and demand in that local market, you're going to get significantly higher unemployment rates. Conversely, if you set the minimum wage below it, it's irrelevant. I want to make the minimum wage irrelevant. In other words, abolish it. I'm not for increasing the minimum wage at all. Do away with it. Why? I want everyone that wants to work to be able to get a job. $5 beats zero, Mr. President. $6 beats zero. $7 beats zero. And if your $10.10 is passed by Congress, people that could have been earning $8 or $9 will find themselves out of a job. This is basic economics. And he's going to couch it in, well, it's only fair. They have to have a living wage. You've heard that? They have to have a living wage. I've heard this from the liberals forever. Is zero a living wage? Because that's what you condemn teenagers, young people, when you insist on a higher minimum wage. You condemn them to years of unemployment. You condemn them from getting their first, second, or third job. Aren't they really well-intentioned, good-meaning people? Yes, they are. But the results matter. The results matter, and the results here is prolonged unemployment for our young people. And that's why we have more and more children, or really adults, having to live with their parents. Having to live with their parents. Into their 20s, in some cases into their 30s. Because they can't get on that career ladder of success that you need to get on. And the more that's prolonged, the more likely that you're going to have a lifetime at the low end. Where if you're lucky, you'll have a part-time job at the real low end. I'm for people earning as much as they can. And that's determined by the market, what people will pay for you. You might think you're worth $1 million, but if you can't find someone that agrees with you, guess what? You earn zero. And what's sad right now, I know that they're, I don't want to call them kids, they're young adults on this campus looking for jobs, can't find it. Probably would work for $5 for 20 hours a week to earn $100. But can't find the job because the minimum wage is over $7. So the great idea, one of the great ideas the president has come up with is to increase the minimum wage to $10.10. Now, why do you think he did this? He knows this, or he should know it. If he doesn't know it, he's incompetent. He has economic advisors that can explain this. There's a wealth of literature on this. And there's a little disagreement, but generally the consensus of most professional economists, they're against the minimum wage. They're against it. There's some bleeding heart liberals that want it higher. Some will say go $15, go to $20. Aren't they really nice people? You know, I'll throw the gauntlet down. Mr. President, we're in the 21st century. Why didn't you propose $20.20? Why didn't you? Huh? Why didn't you propose $20.20? That's a living wage. That's over $40,000 a year. I think most people could live on that. Why didn't you propose $20 or $20.20? Why didn't you? Huh? 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 He knows why. Because then instead of a 20% teenage unemployment, we'd have a 35 or 40% unemployment. And amongst blacks, it'll probably be about 60%. You see, he's playing politics with it, and he's doing it not because he's compassionate. And he feels the pain of the teenagers or the young college student. No, this is a payback to the people that put him in power, the unions. Because the primary beneficiaries of increases in the minimum wage are the unions. And it's not that the union members are making the minimum wage. They know if the minimum wage goes up, their entire wage structure will go up as well. That is the payoff. The biggest supporters of the minimum wage and increasing it are the labor unions. This is not a secret, folks. Economists have been saying this for decades. So that's why it's disappointing, but I'm not surprised. And I anticipated, I thought it would be about $9, $10 and $10. Isn't he nice? Isn't he generous with other people's money? And the economic consequences will be higher teenage unemployment rates, as well as people being fired. People won't be unable to get a job because of the increase. Thank you, Mr. President. You're certainly a caring, caring individual. With people like you in power, I shake my head because your big spending ways are the reason we have a persistently high unemployment rate above 6%, really above 8% most of your administration. And the reason is government spending is out of control. And you're directly responsible for it, as is the Democratic Party. Because of these massive fiscal year deficits resulting in a higher and higher national debt, you have increased uncertainty. And uncertainty is the enemy of any employer. Employers, whether they're businesses, city, colleges, schools, charities, churches, they want certainty and they need to know their cost structure doing business. And they know when you have when the government, the federal government, runs these large deficits, resulting in higher and higher national debt because they have to be financed, that means higher taxes. And that's exactly what President Obama has implemented. The Democratic Party is the party of More and more spending, more and more taxes, more and more regulations, and more printing money or creating money. More and more debt that results in more and more printing of the money. That's what they're about. Has their economic policies worked? They haven't. The U.S. economy is perfectly capable of growing at a 4% or even 5% rate, provided you have the economic incentives in place to do so. And we don't. We actually lost, I think, several places on the Freedom Index. We're now 14. Why? More taxes, more regulations, out of control government spending, more government intervention into the economy. It's not hard to understand. And I agree with the president. There has been a debate in Washington over these last 12 years as what is the appropriate size of government. As far as I'm concerned, government spending has been totally out of control. I am not surprised at all that the real growth in gross domestic product is under the historical trend line. It's not negative. At least it hasn't been negative. Actually, it has been in one quarter, but that's a detail. But the economy has been growing since July of 2009. The problem is we have not had significant job creation. The president, he didn't tout this number. There is at least a 10 million, and I would argue a 12 million job gap. That's how far behind President Obama is. Remember, this is his fifth year as president. We're not talking his first year or second year. I'd give him a pass the first 2 years because there are lags. There are lags. But he's been office 5 years, and his policies, economic policies, simply have not worked. Now, I need to wrap up the show. I'm a little long here, and I only touch on this briefly. And that's what the president did in his speech. He pointed out that he's for immigration reform. I noticed he didn't call it comprehensive immigration reform. I got to check that. He might have. But I thought he just said immigration reform. He was very, very terse in a paragraph of his speech. He's urging or challenging Congress to pass immigration reform. Let me decode what he wants. The Democratic Party, led by Barack Obama, want a so-called pathway to citizenship. Now, they will say that there are 11 million undocumented workers in the United States, and they want to give them over, if they meet certain requirements over a period of time, that they can become citizens of the United States. Now, let me concisely tell you the truth. First of all, it's not 11 million undocumented workers. It's somewhere between 30 and 50 million illegal aliens, and that is the correct term. These people have broke into our country. They didn't follow the legal process of getting a visa, having a passport, presenting it at passport control to an immigration officer of the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and presented their documents and legally come into the United States. No. What they do is that they fly in, do that, and then overstay their visa, or a lot of them, not all of them, cross over into the United States illegally across the Mexican-U.S. border. Now, in terms of countries of origin, about 60% are from Mexico. If you add Central America and South America, you get another roughly 10%. If you add the Caribbean, you're right around 75%. Could be a little higher, a little lower. That's where they're coming from. So most of those are coming across the border. But you do have at least half coming here legally on an airline or ship or whatever, and then overstaying their visa. That is the first crime. The second crime is then they get documents, fraudulent documents, why they want to get a job. So they have to have some identification that would demonstrate casually to these employers that they are have legal status to work, and then they work here illegally. That's a crime. They've committed three crimes. One a misdemeanor, two of them are felonies. You don't reward criminal behavior. And keep in mind, I'm talking about illegal aliens. I'm not talking people that follow the rules and legally immigrate into the United States. If you do that, fine, I welcome you. We can have a debate as to the number later. But what the president really wants and what the Democratic Party wants is to reward these people with citizenship. No, the current law should be enforced. That's what the majority of the American people want. They simply want existing immigration law in force, and that means the removal and deportation of all illegal aliens. In other words, get on a bus, get on a plane, get in your car, get in your truck, and go back to wherever you came from. If we had presidents of the United States that would enforce the immigration law, we would not have a 6.7% unemployment rate, or 8%, or 9%, or 10%. Why? Because the 30 to 50 million people that are here in the United States illegally and working would be back in their homeland, where they belong, and not taking the jobs from American citizens. So that's the second thing that, again, impacts employment. And the only reason why the Democratic Party wants this, they want all these people to get citizenship. They want amnesty. They know they can't call it that, so they change the words. What they're really pushing for right now is, first step, legal status. Legal status means you can work in the country. Next step, citizenship, and then you can vote. And that's why the Democratic Party is pushing this, because they know, and I agree with them, they will get the vast majority of those people voting for them. It's about power, and it's also about money. And they're the only reason the Republican Party, at least some of the leadership, is entertaining this, is they get campaign contributions mainly from businesses, but mainly large corporations that want this as well. Do they care about the American people? Do they care about the worker? Do they care about your children and grandchildren, teenagers in their 20s getting jobs? Absolutely not. Because all of these people are going to compete directly with American citizens. And it's not 11 million. I don't know what the number is. And I'm not going to revisit. I've talked about this in the last two shows. But a broad range is at least 30 to 50 million. And that's the number they hide from you. Because if that number was advertised, no one is right mind in Congress would be for anything like immigration reform. And as far as I'm concerned, until the unemployment rate is 3% or less, don't talk to me about immigration reform. I want the law to be enforced, and that means deportation for all illegal aliens. I don't care if they've been here a day or 30 years. They broke into our country. They committed crimes to be documented, and every day they work here, they're committing another crime. And I see them on this campus every day, and it's all over the country. It's all over Dallas. It's all over Texas. It's all over the United States. These are jobs that Americans used to do. I used to do the jobs. I was a janitor. I was an inventory clerk. I was a stocker. And if I could find a construction job, I would have taken it. And now who has those jobs? Illegal aliens. Not entirely, but the vast majority is the case. If you don't believe me, come to Richland College. I'll point them out to you. Dallas is a sanctuary city. We welcome illegal aliens. This is economic and political suicide, because the American people are waking up. They can't find jobs, and it's because of wrong-headed economic policies, both in terms of the minimum wage and a so-called pathway to citizenship, which really... They're playing games with the words. If you come to this country legally, you're an immigrant, and there's a process in place, and it usually takes many years. But if you follow the process, provide the documents, you eventually can become a U.S. citizen. Not many are able to do that. About a million a year, plus or minus, but roughly a million, which I think is too high, by the way. But as far as I'm concerned, anyone here that's here illegally should be deported. And that simply means there's no need for immigration reform. Just enforce existing law. It's primarily the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, certain large businesses and corporations, certain unions and political parties, primarily the Democratic Party, progressive liberals that are doing it, even though it is their own political base that's getting hurt. And eventually that political base is going to wake up. Who is really getting hurt here? I'll tell you. Blacks, Hispanics, and poor whites. People with low skill sets. People who can't find their first job, that minimum wage job. And they can't find it for the simple reason, who has it? Who has it? The illegal aliens, people that broke into our country. and you have no one, you voted these people in, you're going to have to vote them out of office. You're going to first have to understand what's going on. Because Barack Obama is very good at reading speeches. He has good speech writers that will tell you lies, mislead you, some very effective propaganda. But you got to cut through all that and say who benefits and who loses. As far as I'm concerned, the American people are the big losers because they can't find their jobs. They can't support their families. The United States economy is stagnating. And it's not entirely the problem is illegal immigration. The bigger problem by far is out-of-control government spending. Didn't say much about that other than he's cut the deficit in half. He had a $680 billion. Gee, thanks. We've had 5 years to balance the budget. In other words, zero deficit. And he's got it down to $680 billion. He didn't get it down. It's some Republicans in Congress that got it down grudgingly. They fought and were kicking all the way. They want bigger government. They would love to be able to run another $1 trillion deficit. If they got in the power, the Democrats and the progressives, some of which are in the Republican Party, and control the House and the Senate, we would have $1 trillion deficits until this economy went totally bankrupt and it crashed. And that's where we're heading if we don't stop this reckless, dangerous economic policies of government intervention into the economy. Because all we're doing is building a bigger and bigger, bigger welfare, a warfare welfare state. And it never ends well. It invariably collapses. I want a peace and prosperity economy. And you do that by limiting the size of the government, the size and the scope of the government. And you stop intervening or interfering with the economy. By what you need to do is repeal the minimum wage. What you need to do is deport the illegal aliens. That's what needs to be done, as well as cutting spending and balancing the budget. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We're the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Thank you for listening. I hope we've been a little educational today.